This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs, co-host TJ Inman. We'll be in shortly. We're talking IU Northwestern today. What going into this game does IU need to do to win? What do they, you know, how big is this game in the grand scheme of things? Can they still go bowling even if they lose this week? Now we welcome in TJ Inman. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing well, Sammy. Yeah, like you said, it's very interesting game this week. I mean, we're diehards, and a lot of people listening to this show are diehards, so every week is very interesting. But this one in particular just has a lot of things that I think there's a lot of intrigue surrounding it because of kind of where IU is and what they're about to enter into. You know, you had games against Ohio State and Nebraska, top 10 teams that you felt like Indiana could compete with, but you weren't I know that we all really thought, and I know that we think Nebraska was a very winnable game, and it was a game Indiana should have won, really, after it was you have to think that way. But Northwestern's a team that, you know, they're 3-3 just like Indiana is, but they're as confident as a 3-3 team can possibly be heading into this. And then, but they're really in the same place Indiana is, where, you know, a win gets you to 4-3 to where you're feeling incredibly confident about your chances to make a bowl game. With the games remaining on your schedule, a loss means, yeah, we can still go bowling if we win the games that we're going to be favored in, but we now have basically no margin for error. So it's a really interesting game because both teams are in such similar places.
Yeah, I agree with that, that, you know, both teams at being at 500, but, you know, they got there different ways. Northwestern is coming off of impressive victories on the road against Iowa, where they won 38-31. And at Michigan State, who's in a death spiral right now, they beat the Spartans 54-40, which I haven't gone back to look at that game yet. After seeing the first two and a half Northwestern games, I'm in the middle of the Duke game right now. Them putting up 54 on Michigan State is really impressive, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the difference is in the Northwestern offense. But right now it just seems like Justin Jackson, a running back that, especially you, TJ, but as a site, we have been gung-ho on the entire offseason and heading into the season. He's leading the Big Ten in rushing. And then you have Austin Carr, who, a man of many talents, is leading receiver in the Big Ten. And that's quite impressive when you look at the receivers that the Big Ten has this year. And I don't think that, you know, anybody would have thought that Austin Carr would be leading the conference in receiving after just six games.
No, that's been as big of a surprise as I think you'll find. You know, like you said, Justin Jackson is not a surprise. He's a guy that, you know, we projected on our first team, all Big Ten team. I know that, I don't know who else picked it, but I picked him as the offensive player of the year in the Big Ten. What he's doing is not a surprise to me. The surprise was that he started out the season kind of slow, and I watched each of Northwestern's games this year. He did not look 100% healthy to me at the start of the season. Lacked some explosiveness, lacked some shiftiness that we typically see in him. These last 2 weeks, they've kind of, I don't think that anything has necessarily changed scheme-wise. I'm sure there have been some tweaks, but they've executed better, obviously. And I think that Justin Jackson has been a big difference because he looks a lot more explosive. He looks like the Justin Jackson we thought we'd see coming into the year. These past two games, he has been over 170 yards in both of them, and he's averaging more than 7 yards a carry. And you know, what stands out with this offense is it really is a true feature back offense. There's not going to be a lot of rotation at that running back spot. It's going to be Justin Jackson getting the ball probably somewhere in the range of 30 carries, and he'll probably get a couple of receptions as well. They try to get him 30 to 35 touches, and it's understandable why. For me, that's kind of my first key is containing Northwestern's big two is Justin Jackson and Austin Carr. Carr is a guy that he doesn't look the part of the Big Ten's top wide receiver. And he's not the most talented wide receiver in the Big Ten. I think that there are a handful of players that just, you know, when you watch the game, they look to be more talented than Austin Carr, but he catches everything. I mean, I have not seen him drop hardly anything yet this season. If it's around him, he's making the catch. He's listed at 6'1". He looks a little bit bigger than that. He's got a strong he's scored at least one touchdown in 5 straight games, and he's coming off of the 2 best games that he's played so far. He had 130 yards with 2 scores against Iowa and 73 with 3 scores against – I'm sorry, 3 touchdowns against Iowa and then 2 scores against Michigan State. He's leading the Big Ten in pretty much every statistical receiving category that's, you know, meaningful. So it's not a fluke at this point. I mean, he's not just a 1 or 2 game, you know, one hit wonder. He's really good, and it's going to be interesting to see how Indiana defends him. I would guess that Rashard Fant's going to be on him for most of the game. I think you'll see A'shaun Riggins rotate in there some. They don't really have depth many other standout wide receivers. Flynn Nagel's their second leading receiver, and he's got 16 catches. And then Macon Wilson is, he's got 9 catches, and he's kind of more of a deep threat, but they don't go vertical all that often with the passing game. It's a lot of slant patterns, a lot of out patterns. Basically it's Austin Carr doing a tremendous job of getting a little bit of separation. And then if the ball's thrown near him, he makes the catch. Clayton Thorson, I don't think he's anything better than – I think at his best, he's a pretty good quarterback. I think he is a lot more confident, and obviously you're going to gain confidence when you win at Iowa and win at Michigan State, putting up numbers the way that they did. But I still don't think he's really all that good of a quarterback. I do think that it's a little bit smoke and mirrors, the 54 points that they had. The 38 points against Iowa was largely due to them being incredibly efficient with their scoring chances. Every time that they had a chance on 5 of those 6 scoring chances. So, which, you know, that matters, and that's, I'm not taking away from that victory, but the Michigan State game was the first one where yardage-wise they've really exploded. But the first key for me is going to be limiting Justin Jackson and Austin Carr. You're not going to stop them completely. Nobody's done that yet. And as improved as Indiana's defense is, I don't expect them to do that. But what you need to do is prevent Northwestern from, number one, being able, you know, you want to get them behind the chains a little bit so that they can't just hand it to Justin Jackson 35 times on Saturday. If Indiana can limit those carries because they get them behind the chains with negative plays on first or second down, that'll be big. And if you can force Clayton Thorson to throw to someone other than Austin Carr consistently, then I like Indiana's chances to hold Northwestern's offense in check.
Yeah, I agree with that. And going back to Clayton Thorson, looking at his splits, you know, and wins, he's throwing the ball 104 times and completing 63 passes, and losses 100 while completing 56, and you know, it's not much of a difference in his play there, other than maybe they take a few more shots down the field. They average a full yard more per attempt in their wins, but you know, to me, he's a guy who's going to manage the game. He might, you know, take off with his feet a couple of times, but he's not a guy they're going to throw the ball, you know, 40 to 45 times with and just sling it downfield. They've only attempted, he's only attempted 204 passes in six games, and that's 34 throws a game. That's about average, I believe, for college football. But yeah, you're right. It's going to be a heck of a matchup for the defense to stop Justin Jackson. You're going to have and IU did a good job of this last week, was limiting Nebraska's run game and forcing Tommy Armstrong to throw downfield. And,
yeah.
You know, and we saw it was almost a wing and a prayer with Tommy Armstrong, and making Clayton Thorson throw downfield might be the best way to beat them as well. So, you know, Tigray Scales and Marcus Oliver are going to have their work cut out for them, running around covering the running backs and the short receiving routes. And then, you know, you hopefully Rashard Fant is 100% after tweaking his ankle on Saturday.
Yeah.
He looked okay coming back, but you know, who knows, that thing could swell up after the game, and you know, we haven't heard anything official, but you expect Fant, who's played outstanding football this year, to cover Carr and have A'shaun Riggins cover another receiver, and then, you know, flip if you're on different sides of the field or so. That's what they've been doing. They've been having Fant at the bound, or Fant at one side and Riggins on the other, and not switching on receivers. So, you know, we'll see if Fant's healthy. That'll be a heck of a matchup to watch. Probably one of the better matchups to see overall. TJ, my first key to the game is you know, got to get the run game going for IU.
Yeah.
You know, we've still got no real update on Dan Feeney. Now, Wilson, you know, basically has said he's been doing more for now for 4 weeks. He's traveled with the team to Ohio State. He was with the team during the walk last week against Nebraska, which he wasn't when they were playing Michigan State and Wake Forest. So, now, how he's progressing is anybody's guess outside of the doctors and the team. They need this run game going. They need to get Devine Redding going. They finally scored a touchdown on the ground with a non-Wildcat look, although it's kind of a gadget play. This is a different defensive line. It's not, you know, one of your traditional big boy defensive lines like Nebraska, Ohio State, Wake Forest, or Michigan State. This you'd think that IU would have a little bit more success against Northwestern and really get it going and you know, loosen up that defense and make it easier on the passing game as well. And maybe if you see more balance, you'll see a little bit better consistency out of Richard Lego.
But yeah, Northwestern's run defense is a really interesting case study. And, you know, which one is it? Kind of two-faced, if you will. They were pretty good against Iowa and Michigan State. Really good against Iowa. 1.9 yards per carry on 41 rushes. Michigan State was 2.2 yards per carry. But Michigan State's game plan in that game was really kind of bizarre. They barely gave any touches to their running backs and just kind of abandoned the running game altogether and decided to chuck it, I guess because they fell behind, but it was still kind of weird to see Michigan State not really even try to give the ball to L.J. Scott or Gerald Holmes. I didn't understand what they were doing, but that's what they did. Northwestern's rushing defense stats as a result looked pretty good from that game, but at the Iowa game, it was impressive. Iowa did try to run the ball, 41 carries, and they were unable to move it much at all, under 2 yards a carry. That's really good no matter who you're playing or what they're trying to do. But then a little bit earlier in the year, you know, just the week before that, Nebraska ran for more than 300 yards. And then you had Western Michigan early in the season, which Pat Fitzgerald, this week, Northwestern's coach, noted, he was asked a question this week about early in the season, this is where we are now. So he's, you know, attempting to say that early season stuff doesn't matter. The team is so much different now, and that could be entirely true. It's looked like it the last 2 weeks. So,
was a funny game against Western Michigan too, where, you know, Northwestern essentially had the game won. They'd scored a touchdown. Thorson fumbled into the end zone. It was recovered by Northwestern. It was kept in bounds by a Western Michigan player. Recovered by a Northwestern player. It should have been either a Northwestern ball from the spot of but Western Michigan's player kept the ball in bounds for whatever reason, instead of letting it go out and getting a touchback. So, you know, even though there was a holding penalty on the call, Northwestern, I believe, won at the time, is like 22-21 or 23, something close to that. And then, you know, you could almost put that game out the window in terms of it being they're the only state. You know, that you saw it just game in terms of, you know, missed extra points. So those first two games, Pat Fitzgerald, you throw them out the window and look what they have now. You know, they're giving up 3.7 yards per carry. They've given up 840 yards and 9 touchdowns on the ground this year, I think, unless that's totally something else I'm looking at. But, you know, this is a defense that IU should be able to run on, even with a banged-up offensive line. You still have a lot of veterans and a lot of talent on that offensive line. Although Northwestern's, this is what concerns me the most, TJ, is they have 16 sacks in the game, totaling for 111 yards. It's led by Ifedi, Odenigbo, that guy. Of course, he has to be leading the team in sacks. He's very good. And then, you know, you still have Anthony Walker Jr., and some guys in the secondary, even though I think they're without Matthew Harris for the rest of the season. I think he hurt his knee or leg against Illinois State, so that's a huge loss for them. But that the defensive end and Anthony Walker Jr. are as good as they get in the Big Ten, and that concerns me. How are they going to stop this pass rush and stop Anthony Walker? Because those two could wreck the game. You've seen Lego have issues with the pass rush in the past a little bit, in terms of he spins out and instead of throwing the ball away out of bounds, he'll take a sack or try and force a throw that turns into an interception. So to me, handling that rushing defensive line and Anthony Walker Jr. is going to be huge. Their safety, Godwin, is good as well. He has 4 tackles for a loss. So this defense is an attacking defense, and it's going to be tough. So have a run game, you know, a traditional run game. Now, you know, we'll probably see Xander Diamant get some carries in there as well to try and, you know, offset this rush. But having a balanced attack is going to be absolutely key for IU to come out of this with a win.
Primer that'll be out later this week, finding the IU offense we know and love, which is a balanced attack. You know, I know that a lot of people outside of Bloomington or outside of the Big Ten think of Indiana as Kevin Wilson pass happy offense. We know better. We know that it, you know, really relies on that running game, and what has been a really good running game for pretty much as long as Dan Feeney has been on that IU offensive line. And he's a big miss. We're definitely hoping they get him back. And if they do this week, you know, you feel good about the Indiana running game being able to rebound and do a little bit better. You know, so far these past 2 weeks, it was 2.5 yards against Ohio State, 2.9 yards against Nebraska. That's just not good enough. Northwestern could be vulnerable against the run. They've proven to be vulnerable against the pass. The secondary not near as good as it was last year. Michigan State threw for 424 yards. And then Tommy Armstrong and C.J. Beathard didn't have huge yardage days, although it looked like in that Nebraska game, Armstrong could have if Nebraska, you know, didn't have such success running the ball. But they had efficient days, which, you know, we've seen Tommy Armstrong in person. And I, you know, efficiency is not something that he's going to do against a really strong secondary. So I think that there's going to be a big opportunity for Indiana to throw the ball. I hope that they challenge them vertically with Ricky Jones, with Nick Westbrook, maybe with Donovan Hale or Kameon Patrick. But I hope that they do test out that vertical passing game, which maybe what you have to do is hit some vertical passes to open up the defense and use your passing game to get the running game going, because right now the confidence in the running game is not there. I'd like to see the offense come out, be aggressive to start the game, and then after that, see if you can run the ball against a soft enough defense if you hit them for a couple of big plays through the passing game. I know that that's not what they've been doing so far. They've been starting the games with conservative play calling, but it hasn't worked recently. I think you can certainly understand it against Ohio State, and it helped keep them in the game. You might say that conservative play calling shortened the game for you and helped you be in it in the fourth quarter and give you a shot. So that's defensible. I understand that. The same can be said for Michigan State, and it ended up working out there. As the offense got going in the second half and you were still in it because you'd shortened the game. So I understand it, but against Nebraska, it didn't work. Your offense was far too conservative for far too long in that game. So I'd like to see them come out, vertically test this Northwestern secondary, which has proven to be vulnerable. They do have some playmakers, as you mentioned, and the pass rush is a concern, but I think you need to try to trust that passing game, see if you can soften up the defense, and then hit them with some with the running game after that. So see if the passing game can open up the running game, which is not typically what you see happen, but I think it could be a philosophy that might pay dividends for Indiana against the Northwestern defense. Obviously, if Dan Feeney's back, maybe that changes things, and you say, all right, we got our offensive line leader back, the best player on our offense is back, let's use him, let's run to that right side, see if we can get that going. But if Feeney's not back, I'd like to see that strategy employed. Try out the vertical passing game and then go to the running game from there.
Yeah, you know, get your play calling against us and Nebraska and Michigan in the game. Because, I mean, whatever the score looks a lot better as what they were then, you know, immediately being down 24-0 and going through and out and, just chucking the ball. But Northwestern's had more of a matchup opponent on similar levels. This is a team you should be evenly with. It is on the road, but, you know, better than Northwestern. And you're right. Take a few shots downfield. Open the playbook up, and see what you could do. If you come out and run the ball, settle for field goals, going to be Northwestern. Especially when Kevin Wilson brought up that Griffin Oakes has issues kicking on grass. Great. Now you have a head case of a kicker who is playing on grass. Spent the last weeks trying to practice on grass. In a stadium that's tricky to kick field goals, right off the lake in
where Wiggins could be going, like anyway, no place, and put the onus on him. You're right. I'd like to see some deep throws. Ricky Jones needs to continue doing what he's doing. I like the shot they took down against Nebraska on that drive when they got down trying to get in, and they got aggressive, and it worked. Kind of like the Colts. Man, it is kind of like the Colts where you see the offense up pace, takes down, and it works. So I think it was a 3 or 4 play drive, and boom, the end zone. Do more, it's easier to say do more of that and it'll work. They got to get Westbrook back involved. He's been kind of missing the last couple weeks in terms of getting consistently in big plays. Put your trust in Lego to the ball downfield. If he throws an interception, okay, whatever. It's like a punt. You got to be head throw. He misses a lot of wide open throws, and he tries to fit the ball into windows where maybe against teams like Ohio State and Michigan State, but without their top defensive back, Northwest can get away with more of those. Get the ball to your playmakers. Loosen up this. Use your running backs. And I'd like to see more of Mike Jett and Dante Williams in the back. Hopefully, Cole Guest is back this week. We haven't heard anything new from him either. He has the whole, just looks like Devine is a nice running back. He's a nice complement to Jordan Kevin Coleman. But I just have seen that feature back that we were all worried about which Devine Redding we were going to get this year. And it looks like we get the thing that against Penn State. He's not explosive enough to get to the holes, and especially with the holes being for a limited time without Dan Feeney and without Demetrius Hill, you need that burst. So I'd like to see if you're going to try the same run plays on the outside, I'd like to see you do it with Devontae Williams, who has some explosiveness, and Mike Majette. And for the love of all that is good, can we get Mike Majette on a couple screen passes and block from him? Because those plays for most of the season when they're set up well. So, sprinkling in, do something that doesn't – make the IU fan want to bash their head in against the wall and go, this is the same stuff we've tried for the last weeks, and it's not working. So, I think it's up to the IU offense, offensive coaching staff, come up with a game plan that's a little different and take a few risks, because this is a game, if you win, you're in good shape to get 6 or 7 wins. If you lose, you're still in good shape for 6, but you're going to go into start the second half of your season with a loss. You fall below 500. You're 1-3, and you come home and play a Maryland team who's improved this year. The last time into Memorial Stadium, they handed Indiana their rear end. So, to me, play like there's no tomorrow. You're no longer playing the only real big boy on the schedule left is Michigan. You have to show something on tape to win this game. You got to do it. And if that's using Xander or doing something funky with the running backs, I'm okay with it.
I agree. I think we're both in line that aggressiveness on the offensive side of the ball, just in general, whether that's some gimmick play calls, whether that's some trick plays. I'm not saying that needs to be the case. Maybe it ends up being that if you find something in practice that or in the film room that you think is going to work against Northwestern, great. But I think just aggressiveness in general from the offense would be great to see this Saturday, because I feel like the Northwestern defense, while solid, is nowhere near what they were last year. And I think that there's an opportunity for Indiana's offense to kind of have a breakout performance on Saturday. And I personally think that if they do have a pretty solid day, solid to good, I think would be, I feel like with Indiana's defense, it would be enough to get the job done in Evanston. I do think that the offense is not that far away from having a big day. I'm not suggesting that they are, you know, one or two plays away from scoring 50 points. No, I'm not suggesting that. But I do think they're not that far away from.
Yeah, it's not the Xander run 2014 offense where you had to, in order to score a touchdown, either get an interception inside the 20 and run a reverse with Shane Wynn. It's an offense where if you just clean up a few things and, you know, maybe make a few some better play calls and be a little bit more aggressive, that you could put up 30 points or 35 points and maybe even 40 points.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I think it's an offense that can score in the 30s, which, you know, with this defense playing the way that it is, you feel pretty solid about your chances to win the game if you get in the 30s, or at least be right there. It doesn't have to be an offense that scores 50 points to win a game. It'd be awesome if they did, if they scored 50 points, but it doesn't have to happen that way. I think that, you know, like you said, just cleaning up a few things, I think more aggressive play calling. I think that, you know, you feel that way also. That doesn't mean, you know, oh, it's fourth and five at the 45-yard line, let's chuck it to the end zone. No, not that aggressive, but, you know, more vertical passing, you know, more screen passes, more, I don't know if, I don't feel like criticizing Devine Redding for, I don't think he's played poorly. I'll say that. I don't think Devine Redding has played poorly. He has not been great, but I think a lot of it is on, number one, like you said, there's just a lack of explosiveness there for him. That's just the limitation that it appears he has. And number two, I just don't think that he's being put into situations where he can be that successful, because the holes aren't there. And the plays that are being called when he's getting the handoff are typically in kind of predictable situations. So, you know, changing up some of the predictability of the offense, you know, maybe more first down throws. They don't have to be deep first down throws. Indiana's proven to be pretty effective on bubble screens and tunnel screens. They've proven to be pretty effective on short slants, particularly to Mitchell Page or Ricky Jones, where the receivers have an opportunity to get the ball 4 or 5 yards downfield and make a play. Things like that on first down, as opposed to, you know, a stretch play to Devine Redding or a halfback dive to Devine Redding. And again, this talk of changing things, maybe the change in the offense is Dan Feeney comes back and the offensive line suddenly performs a lot better because of how good he is. And then, you know, you can go back to being a power running team on first down. That's fine if that happens. But right now, that's not what you have. So for as long as Dan Feeney's not there, still not working, then you've got to change things up, because continuing to try to run the ball on first down with just plays up the middle has not worked for the offense, and it's put them into bad situations on third down, to where then you're forced into low percentage throws and you're not converting on third down. You're not converting on fourth down when you go for it. And then you're not producing as an offense the way that we feel like they should be capable of. So we'll see what the offensive game plan is. And I think that's going to go a long way toward determining the outcome of the game.
Are we back?
I hear you. Yeah.
All right. We're back. We apologize, folks, for the delay. Hopefully we didn't lose all our listeners, we've had some internet issues over here at Hoosier Huddle. So anyway, we were talking about Devon Redding, how he's running hard, his effort is good, his attitude is good, but it's just not there. He's not getting the help that he needs. He's not getting the blocking he needs, and he's not getting the play calling he needs. TJ, you're 100% right in terms of, you know, opening up this running game with the pass, not having people stack the box, and just softening it up. So maybe he could turn these 1 and 2 yard runs into 3 or 4 yard runs and set himself up for success.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm not sure what all people heard or what got cut off or dropped, but I made some excellent points on my own. I was talking to myself. But I think it's important for the offensive staff and the game plan to reflect that, you know, this is, I know it's nice to say next man up and have that philosophy, but the play calling that you would have with Dan Feeney in your lineup cannot be the same that you have with we've seen. You know, I'd love to see on first down, I'd love to see some different play calling as opposed to putting Devon Redding into halfback dives or halfback stretch plays that are not working the same as when you had Dan Feeney on that offensive line. Now, if Dan Feeney's back, you know, I'm fine with trying to be that power running team on first down and see how it goes. I'm fine with that. And if it doesn't work again, you know, it's still not working even with him back, then you go away from it. But if he's not back on Saturday, I'd really love to see first down feature more screen passes or short bubble screens, tunnel screens to Page or Jones or Westbrook, maybe Kameon Patrick, that's the way to get him involved. You know, quick slants. We've seen that be successful with Mitchell Page and Ricky Jones as well. We saw Nick Westbrook take one to the house against Wake Forest. I'd love to see them try some different things on first down to get them ahead of the chains as opposed to, you know, be stuck in third and medium, third and long all day, which is just not a recipe for success. So it's up to the offensive staff and the game plan to kind of adjust for the fact that what has worked in the past on offense with a terrific offensive line is not really working right now. And until you get Dan Feeney back or until you prove otherwise, you need to switch things up.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And it goes back to, you know, the definition of insanity is, you know, how many times do you have to go back to the well to figure out it's not working?
Sure.
So,
sure.
Taking deep shots is another key to this game. Special teams wise, TJ, we haven't talked about special teams in a while as a unit, not just Griffin Oaks, but Solomon Vault for Northwestern is a heck of a returner. He's averaging over 30 yards a kick return. Took one to the house last week against Michigan State. He's just a dangerous weapon that they have. And then on the flip side, Indiana's got to get something going in their kick return game. I thought Devontae Williams returned the ball pretty well against Ohio State. They just had better athletes on special teams where, you know, if he had hit that second gear against, you know, lesser competition, maybe he breaks one for longer. But he, you know, he got the ball out past the 25 a lot of the times. Last week, it just wasn't there. You know, the offense who's dying for points right now is starting inside the 20 most of the time when the return's coming out. And it's just not good for business. If you're trying to jumpstart an offense, is starting behind the eight ball and not taking it at the 25 if it goes into the end zone. So to me, the kick return game, you know, this is where Cole Guest was pretty good. He was fearless. He was quick to get to the ball and make a decision and go. Where Devontae Williams, I don't know why what was happening last week. Maybe it was the stiff wind that they were kicking into, but he looked like he would take a false step and then go. And by the time he made that decision, the coverage team was down there, and he got lit up a couple of times with that. And in terms of Indiana's coverage teams, they're going to have to look out for Solomon Vault and hope that Griffin Oaks could get this quad issue taken care of and start booming kicks through the end zone. Although that's an area where Aaron Del Grosso has been good is in touchbacks. He's had one kickoff this year. And, you know, in hindsight, was that because Griffin Oaks had tweaked the quad, or was that just because they wanted to get him some run in a game on kickoffs? But he's a guy who could kick it out of the end zone as well. So I think those two and starting field position is going to be key as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Solomon Vault's dangerous kick returner in a game where the margin figures to be fairly close. You know, plays like that can certainly change the game. His Vault's return against Michigan State last week came at a time when the Spartans had a lot of momentum, and Vault was able to stem that and put the game away for Northwestern. So you don't want to allow them to have any big plays on special teams, and it'd be great if Indiana could they had one last week with the blocked punt, so it'd be great if Indiana could have something like that this week again that could kind of change momentum.
Mitchell Page had a great kick return too. I think it was 39 yards. He's a guy who, if you have Simi Cobbs healthy and you have Jason Harris healthy, if you wanted to spark something up on kick returns, you put him back there. He was a terrific returner in high school. He's been a terrific punt returner for IU, a guy who
can't risk
people
it.
Miss and go, but you can't risk losing a guy like Mitchell Page on offense after losing Timmy Cobbs and Jayshon Harris. So it's, you know, at the beginning of the year, I thought it might be possible, but now it's, you can't take that risk, and you're in real trouble on offense if you lose Page like that. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. The season, this is a key three-game stretch, TJ, with Northwestern and then Maryland and traveling to Rutgers. It's a stretch where if IU gets out two out of three with wins, you're in great shape heading into the final the final three games with Penn State, Michigan, and Purdue to end the season. If you win this one, you could start talking about, you know, seven wins. If you drop this one, six is still right there. Seven could still be there, but most likely, to me, next week's game against Maryland is the pivot point on the teeter totter that is IU football.
Sure.
So, with that going forward, what are your predictions for Saturday?
I'll be honest. I really have no clue what to expect on Saturday. I expect a close game, but beyond that, I don't know. We are asked to pick predictions, and I would rather just go all in with the. Just being optimistic, and I'm not just pie in the sky. I do think this is a very realistic possibility. I'll take Indiana to win on Saturday, and then for those that follow this kind of thing, it's expected to be kind of a toss-up game. I mean, it's a 1.5, 2-point spread in favor of Northwestern, which is basically just home field. So these two teams are viewed as pretty much equal. And I'll take Indiana to have a good day on offense, continue to play pretty well on defense, and then get a very back-and-forth, tight victory, which should be big for morale and obviously big for the rest of the season. I'll go with Griffin Oaks actually hitting a couple of field goals, Indiana winning at 27-24.
Ooh. That's a bold prediction, TJ. I'd like to think that IU wins this one, but there are a lot
of... I don't feel good about it, but why not?
Yeah, there are a lot of factors that go into it. It's a noon game. It's an 11 a.m. game up in local time in Evanston. It's usually a sleepy start, and that's the issue that IU had last week was, you know, you started in a 17-0 hole and just couldn't dig out of it. So if IU starts well, you know, set their alarms a little bit earlier and avoid that. It's not jet lag because you're just going to Chicago, but avoid that 11 a.m. sloppiness. Yeah. I think they'll have a shot and open up the offense. But Northwestern is a good team. They're playing really good football right now. You know, IU is there. There's a lot in question with them, with their offense. Can this, you know, this defense, I'm sold that they're improved, but this defense is now overdue for one of those games where they have, you know, more than one or two breakdowns or one or more than one or two bounces that go the other way. But I will be Johnny Optimism with you and say IU breaks out of their offensive slump you know, finally wins in Evanston for the first time since 1993 and wins the game. I'm going to go 31-24. Hopefully they throw the ball downfield, get off to a quick start. Usually they've started pretty well in Evanston. I know 2007 and 2009, I believe they got out to big leads and just couldn't hold on. So I'm going to take IU to win this one, 31-24, and, you know, roll into the next two games with Maryland and Rutgers. But I have been wrong before. I do not have a good feeling about it, but I think that this is, you know, Indiana usually plays their best football after a bad loss. And Nebraska was a game that it wasn't a bad loss like Wake Forest, but it was a bad loss that they should have won and had a chance to make some history there. So they're resilient. I think they come in and open up the offense and put some points on the board.
Yep. Yeah, I think that neither one of us are incredibly confident at all. I'm certainly trepidatious about this one, but it's a game that's going to be there for Indiana to have a chance, and there's no doubt there. I think it's a classic toss-up. So it's all about, you know, who shows up on that day and plays better, because I think both teams are very capable of winning this one if they put on an A game. So hopefully the Indiana team we know is capable of showing up does, and we are talking on Sunday or Monday with a big positive feeling towards the rest of the season. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see, and I'll put this caveat in my prediction to cover both sides. If IU plays like they did against Nebraska in terms of play calling, they're not going to win this game. It's, you know, you cannot be conservative and get down 17-0 and hope, you know, Northwestern's going to make mistakes and not run the ball like Nebraska did to keep them in it. You know, if they come out and throw the ball deep, and my prediction is based on that, they changed their offense a little bit in terms of taking shots. If they come out and run the ball, try to establish the run before throwing it, it's not going to be a good day for IU, and fans are going to be really frustrated and hitting Twitter pretty hard and making me laugh. But, you know, to me, my prediction is just based on they have to change the offense. They got to take some shots downfield, and hopefully the coaching staff does that and makes those adjustments and really put some pressure on the Northwestern defense and not to get off to a slow start like 17-0. But if you do have a shot to take a lead and get a lead, because now two out of the last three games you've been behind at some point in the game by two scores, you know, before IU's been on the board. Just get points early if you can, and if they gift you a good field position, you got to put it in for seven. And really, you know, there should be a lot of IU fans up there proportionally to the Northwestern fans, and get those guys into the game and making some noise. Otherwise, you're going to have, you know, people jumping ship at the first sign of a wave. you know, when something goes wrong. So hopefully they can adjust and make those adjustments and come out and win, because a win here and you're sitting pretty for getting your sixth win on November 5th in Piscataway, and then taking some pressure off the rest of the season, and you know, you have your bowl secured, and you could, you know, just play with that, you know, without that pressure, and just enjoy the rest of the season and try and knock off Penn State, Michigan, and Purdue. So these next three games are key, TJ. I know we've beaten that horse to death, but thanks for joining us and listening to us. TJ, have a wonderful rest of your Wednesday. We apologize for the technical difficulties. We'll find a better room closer to the Wi-Fi router.
Yeah, no problem. And thanks, everybody. Have a good week.
Yep, keep coming back to HoosierHuddle.com for all your IU football analysis and stories. We'll be in Evanston. It's a noon kick on BTN. So, you know, set your alarms a little early. You know, nice lunch and a beverage at noon. If you're in the Chicago area, it's a 9 a.m. or 11 a.m. local game. You know, if you're going to the game, hit us up on Twitter. Let us know where you're tailgating, where you're sitting. We'd love to stop by and chat some IU football. And we'll see where it goes from here. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle and come back often. And once again, we apologize for the technical difficulties today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.